Lesson 6. Questions and Answers. The Power of Detachment and Surrender.
We've had the alarm clock for the first awakening, and now comes the real awakening. For some people at Hollyhock, good morning. That may also be the alarm clock, because it's 7 o'clock in the morning there. Austin, I don't know, it's 8 or 9 o'clock there. You may be half awake. Here everybody is fully awake in one sense, and perhaps also in another sense of the word. As you may have noticed, laughter was an important and is an important part of our gathering. It's very liberating, particularly to laugh at the human condition and to laugh at one's own mind patterns, because it implies that you've taken one step back, a retreat, and have seen your own patterns or your own drama that's produced by the mind patterns. And when you recognize drama as drama, it becomes also funny. Awakening, so, is not a serious business. If you make it serious, then you've gone astray somewhere and the mind is trying to do something. Awakening, a synonym for that, of course, is enlightenment. Another beautiful word, which in the English language, as it so happens, implies two things. There's light in there, enlightenment. It implies light, the light of consciousness, the clarity, the awakened consciousness, the clear seeing, and it implies lightness in the sense of lack of heaviness, gravity, weight, which includes seriousness. Because the mind-made me, the egoic self, takes itself very seriously. It also takes itself and it's very seriously in its attempt to become enlightened. So humor, right humor, not egoic humor. Egoic humor also exists. It might be to laugh at somebody else and think, oh, I'm much, by comparison, I am much more intelligent than this silly person. Laughter frees you up inside. And I hadn't realized until I read some of the questions to you yesterday that every question also seemed to have a funny side. I didn't realize it until everybody started laughing. I'm not waiting for the next sentence to come, and I hope you are not either. If we were waiting, I would be under stress and you would be impatient. And perhaps you now realize how enjoyable it is when I'm not speaking. We will look at a few more questions, including some questions on the pain body. This is by someone who is sleepless at night. My wife snores. My now at night is miserable. I have tried electronic gadgets and earplugs to no avail. How does one respond and not react? Signed, awake but only at night. P.S. I have tried your cold soup analogy. Sweetheart, would you please stop snoring? It doesn't work. No, of course the cold soup method is not going to work here because snoring is an involuntary process. It just happens. I hope at home you have separate bedrooms. But here, well, any situation that you cannot change, and there are situations of that kind, or situations that you cannot change at this time, perhaps change will be possible at some point, but right now, at this moment, there's nothing one can do. Whether you're in prison or, metaphorically speaking, in prison or have some other condition, some life situation. Now, if there's truly nothing you can do, or there may be something you can do, but there are certain important reasons why perhaps you cannot take action right now. If that is truly so, if you cannot change the situation, there are only two options left. You remove yourself or you surrender. Oh, yes, I forgot the third one. You suffer. And that's always the case, then. It's your choice which of the three you choose. Surrender in this case is surrender to the fact that you get woken up several times during the night and then perhaps feel sleepy during the day. But just surrender to, yes, there you are awake again. And then you might use this opportunity and just go into the body. What else can you do? Or shake her. But then it starts again. Or you rent a tent and move into a tent. The thing that doesn't work and that which generates suffering is complaining mentally about the situation, about a situation that you can do nothing about right now. Complaining mentally or complaining also to others, anybody who is prepared to listen to you, you can complain about the situation. And if you observe closely, you see that something in you likes that. Something in you feels strengthened by the complaining, and that's the false sense of self. Whenever you complain, it strengthens the false me, because you are right. the complainer is always right. When is tolerance enabling and or masochism? You may remember we talked about yes to what is not always a yes on the verbal external level. It's an inner attitude, an inner state that you bring to the situation. And out of that inner state of openness and alert attention, which goes with the yes to what is, alert attention, which is intelligence, out of that the right response comes for that situation. And the right response for that situation is not necessarily the word yes, or yes, go ahead. Yes, hit me over the head. Is not necessarily what comes out of your mouth. Out of that, it's quite possible that the word no comes out of your mouth. No. That's not right, that's not it. I'm not going there. So it's be careful not to mistake that state of, because the yes to what is a state of consciousness. It's not the literal, sometimes it is, but it's not always a literal yes that you agree with whatever somebody is doing. Somebody may be at this moment committing an act of violence, and it is within your field of possibility to do something about it. And then you will see the situation and you will act, perhaps to stop what's happening. Nobody can predict what you will do out of presence. But it will be right. So there is great strength in the yes to what is. Very great strength. Whenever you have said what you had to say in any situation, step back into stillness. Otherwise, the mind will take over and it will become a non-ending stream of words. You have all witnessed that in other people and perhaps in yourself. People can go on and on about the same thing, and again, they're dragged along by a mind stream. Okay, enough, enough, okay. And then they're quiet for 20 seconds. Oh, just one more thing. And while they're quiet for 20 seconds, you can feel the energy built up in them, like... And that dissolves only through, again, bringing alert attention from where you can observe the mind rather than be it. Your speaking then becomes more powerful. Any words that you say become more powerful because they always come directly out of the stillness. The strange thing is, you may have noticed almost all the questions, the answer to all the questions always takes you back to the same point, the same origin. It's always the same answer in a way, in different aspects. And basically, all the questions are the same question. And once you've gone very deep into the answer, which is in yourself, that's the end of the questions. There's another question on this sheet of paper. How can you witness and feel your feelings at the same time? One could say, you cannot really feel your feelings until you witness your feelings. Because until you witness, you observe, bring awareness to your feelings, you are your feelings. So you don't feel them, you are them. You act them out. And most importantly, your feelings and your thought processes are linked. Feelings energize thought processes that reflect those particular feelings, and the thought processes, the story, adds further energy to the feelings. And this is how certain feelings survive in the body long after an event has passed, which feelings that in an animal would just pass through, in humans gets associated with a story that you can keep telling yourself and others, and so you can keep the feelings alive, the vicious circle. So you're not really feeling your feelings, you are so immersed in them that you are the feelings. So it's called identification. And so when you bring awareness, there is a place from where you can truly feel the feelings. And as you do that, the story is taken out because awareness replaces thinking. There's a shift then from being identified with the story in the head, the thought processes, to being the aware presence. So you're no longer fueling the feelings with stories in the head. And now you can watch and feel them directly, whatever it may be. Feel it as an energy field in the body. But also be aware of yourself as that which looks, sees, feels, the field of attention. In the same way that you look externally at a tree, you are aware of sense perceptions. Flowers, trees, you listen, bring awareness to sense perceptions. That is an enormous help in bringing awareness to your feelings. The more awareness you bring to sense perceptions, the easier it is to bring awareness to what you feel inside, because it's simply a shift from externally directed awareness. Ultimately, nothing is external because the entire universe takes place inside you. But let's just put it like that. Externally directed awareness and inner directed awareness. So you are present within and present without. So the enormous importance of being present without, also as far as your inner life is concerned, because it's one awareness. One could ask a similar question. How can I witness eating an apple and feel this, how you're eating the apple at the same time? It's only when you truly are present as you eat the apple that you can truly feel and taste the apple. Before, it's a process that is semi-conscious or even totally conscious. Eating is a goes back to a very long time, ingesting substances. And you can observe certain humans engaged in intelligent conversation at a dinner table, and the moment they put something in their mouth, they go completely unconscious. They're totally... And they're not really tasting the food, they're just gobbling it down. And then when they've swallowed, they wake up for a moment again, and then they talk about literature or philosophy. But to really eat an apple consciously is a wonderful thing. Then you bring something that is usually unconscious, you make it conscious. Maybe that's called tantra, if you do it with sexuality. But it could be any activity that would usually be very unconscious, that is an animal impulse in humans, and you bring consciousness to it, witness it, observe it. It then has a different quality. It becomes beautiful. And then you can truly taste the apple and be present. But there's always more than that which you witness. There is the witnessing presence. Who is that? What is that? That's you. Some people call it the I Am. One person, an early 20th century spiritual teacher, Gurdjieff, whom some of you know, spoke of self-remembering. And really what he meant was to remember who it is that is doing this or experiencing this or perceiving this. Not the story-based entity, not thinking, okay, I'm John Smith and I'm eating an apple. That's not it. No, John Smith is eating an apple at this moment. No, to sense that which knows, that which is aware, that in you that is aware that there is eating at this moment. So there's awareness of something, and at the same time, self-awareness of the deepest sense of I. And so that is in any, whether you're eating an apple, watching a tree, engaged in some kind of action or activity, or watching an inner feeling, there's always the manifested and the, one could say, the unmanifested. We called it sometimes the background and the foreground. In the foreground is what happens. In the background is the field, the I am, the deepest I am, in which whatever happens is happening. Now, it can happen that the background, that what we call here the background or the ground, which we could call being, the ground of being, it can happen that that ground is so intensely felt, realized, that what is occurring, one could almost say, is a shift. And this is how a deeply awakened being experiences the world. And that shift is what, as you are just awakening, what is foreground becomes the background. And that which you perceived as the background as you were awakening becomes so, it's realized in its vastness, that that becomes the foreground. In other words, your sense of beingness, the spacious field of presence, is so vast and all-fulfilling that whatever is happening is just a little, sometimes I call it a ripple on the surface of the ocean, is the event. And you feel your own being or being so strongly that that occupies the entire foreground. And any event is a background, a little background event. And so that is from that place, certain Indian teachers say the world is unreal. It's absurd if we take that as a philosophical proposition and then start believing in it. It doesn't make sense. You can claim 100 times that the world is unreal, but the next moment something happens and you react. So where's the unreality of the world if the world upsets you so much? It was only an idea in the head. But they talk from that place where to them whatever happens is like a dreamlike structure. They can see how quickly it appears, how quickly it disappears. Any event, anything, is fleeting. Of course it is. Right now you're here, in another now, on the same date, totally different surroundings. This has dissolved already. Gone. What hasn't dissolved is that which is aware. So some Indian teachers then, from that place where the vastness of the sense of I am or beingness, or presence, the stillness, could say, is so vast, the I alive stillness, that is becomes the foreground and any events become the background. But for many of you, as this is beginning to emerge, it could be better described as you sense it already coming in the background. And that's wonderful. It's more than most human beings on this planet now or in the past ever experienced. It's a wonderful thing. And it's from that place of the background having become the foreground that Jesus could say, I have overcome the world. And it's from that place, perhaps also, that Krishnamurti, once in a talk, he was already quite old, said to his audience, do you want to know my secret? And they'd been coming for 30 years waiting for the secret. And they all said, yes, please. Okay, here it is, he said. I don't mind what happens. I believe this question here has just been answered. You speak of using the senses to outer presence. What about going deeper and going beyond the senses? If everyone around you is complaining and building their story, what do? Say, is that so all day? Comment on their complaining or spend less time with the unconscious people. Some days you would practice all day. The last statement is partially true, and not just some days. You will practice all day. Well, is that so is not necessary to say. The story is the momentum of the egoic mind. It will try to draw you in some way, to make you part of the story. The story, very often in people, is energized even more by their pain body, then the story can be quite a violent story. So So there's a story, but it's energized by enormous emotion, which is past emotion to a large extent, not necessarily generated by this little event that was the triggering event, but the emotion is far deeper. It's human pain that has lived in each human being for millennia and has built up. It is inherited human pain. But what we call pain body, this energy field, this residue of past emotion, of past emotional suffering that lives in humans, tends to use the mind to renew itself, to feed on your thinking. And that becomes the story that is energized by human pain. At other times, it may just be the mind pattern without the energizing effect of the pain body. But even that has a strong pulling power. Your greatest weapon, so to speak, is stillness as you listen to the story. And you will notice that's not a weapon that you can fight actively with, because the moment you fight the story in someone, you've become part of it. Even if you say you are in a story, you're telling, the moment you start talking, that'll become a story. Your story will be that they have a story.
Lesson 6, continued on disc 8.
Even if you say you are in a story, you're telling, the moment you start talking, that'll become a story. Your story will be that they have a story. And they will insist, no, this is the reality. And they will tell you, no, you're in complete denial of reality. No, I'm not in denial of reality. So the most vital thing is simply to be there as a still presence. And is that easy? Yes and no. It is easier if you are connected with the inner body as the stories happen around you, as you're listening. So you are rooted here, deep within. And that keeps you still. Keeps your mind still, and from there there's attention that flows out. And in that attention, you're aware not only, we come back to the same again, you're aware not only of that which is arising in this moment, which is the story that you're listening to, you're also aware of the field of attention. And as you are aware of the field of attention, it becomes easier to connect with something in that other human being that lies underneath the story. So you can sometimes, to some extent, bypass the story and connect with that human being at a deeper level where there lies their own stillness. It's nobody's stillness, but just put it like that. Where lies their own field of stillness. So you can miraculously sometimes connect from the stillness within you to their stillness, and then on top you have floating the story. And sometimes that can actually dissolve the story in the other person, or at least shorten it. Because otherwise, it goes on and on and on. Some people have stories that they live with for years and years, and just things get added to it. New episodes in my story, latest episode in my story. It is not surprising that people love watching soap operas because they all have their own one going too, and then they feel better and they say, you see, these people on TV, they have theirs too, so it must all be very real. But at least when you're watching it on TV, you can feel, oh, at least that's not my problem. It does require a high degree of alertness not to be drawn into somebody's story, not to become part of it. Now, they may already have made you part of it in a way. They have already decided that you have your assigned place in their story, and there's nothing you can do about that. But not make it a story, the story continue in your mind and then link into theirs. Almost anything you say in a situation like that is too much.